Now, better late than never. That's what you might say about the bookstore chain Borders. It's finally entering the e-book market. Yesterday, Borders announced it's launching an e-bookstore. Steve Carmody of Michigan Radio reports.
E-book or electronic book sales is the fastest growing segment of the retail book business. And up until now, Borders has been on the sidelines. But it now says it's partnering with Canadian e-book reader maker Kobo. E-book buyers can use Borders apps to read their selections on a variety of devices, including BlackBerries, iPhones, and iPads, but not with the popular Kindle. Borders CEO says the company's goal is to control 17% of e-book sales a year from today. As Borders struggles to sell books in retail stores, Michael Norris, a publishing trade analyst with Simba Information, says this could help.
With all of the hype and bluster about e-books, only about 9% of the U.S. adult population bought an e-book in 2009, and there's plenty of room for expansion.
Borders badly needs a boost in sales. The bookseller lost $33 million in the first quarter of the year, on top of losses last year. Only about 10% of books bought in the U.S. are sold by Borders, leaving it far behind Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For NPR News, I'm Steve Carmody in Ann Arbor.
This week, we're talking about managers and managing. Today, we talk to a man who doesn't mince words when it comes to his thoughts on that yearly or twice-yearly ritual called the Performance Review. Business professor Samuel Colbert wrote a book called Get Rid of the Performance Review. He joined us in our studios in Los Angeles to talk about that book and his theories. Thank you very much for joining us.
Nice to be here.
Now, this book originated in an article in the Wall Street Journal a couple of years ago, and it generated enormous response, both agreeing with you and also disagreeing with your point. So start off by telling us why you think performance reviews ought to just disappear.
Well, there's just two small reasons. First, they're dishonest and fraudulent. And second, they're just plain bad management.
Well, there you go. All right.
In the managers in the service of saying they're evaluating performance create the circumstances for people to be their worst. They're not going to get once you start with performance reviews, you're not going to hear what people really think. You're not going to hear them talk about what's wrong and going wrong. They're not going to talk about results they have doubts about. They're going to talk about all their successes. It becomes total baloney.
When you say it makes for bad management, though, you've written that there are two agendas in a performance review and that in a way make people speak at cross purposes.
That's right. They start off in a clash. The boss already has heard with his boss what he want to pay the guy or the woman. So they come up with a review that's all backwards. It's just to tell the employee what he or she needs to do to become more effective. The employee walks in thinking she or he has done a wonderful job and wants to get credit. They've got a few things at stake, like pay, career, promotion. The employee wants to be seen as a positive. They want to have known that their real talents and contributions were seen and recognized.
Well, it would seem, though, that that doesn't necessarily mean get rid of the performance review. It may mean tweak it in certain ways. There are certainly performance reviews out there now that are based on what someone might call objectively metrics. I've seen examples where nurses are judged on rates of infection in their unit. Could not many jobs have those sorts of specifics?
Some jobs you can score the production. That's a different metric. We're scoring production. But that's not all somebody does. You could have a salesperson who sells a lot of product and in the process gives a company a bad reputation. Once you set up the metrics, that's the only focus for the employee. The problem with performance reviews is that the metric that counts most for the employee is the boss's opinion. So the employee starts doing what he or she thinks is going to score in the boss's mind and not even talk about what he or she believes is necessary for the company to get the results that really count.
Samuel Colbert is a professor of the Anderson School of Management at the University of California, Los Angeles. His new book is Get Rid of the Performance Review, How Companies Can Stop Intimidating, Start Managing, and Really Focus on What Really Matters. Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, really my pleasure. Thank you, Renee.
And if you love performance reviews or hate them or have any other opinions about them at all, let us know at npr.org. Tomorrow, we talk about how managers can amplify the talent around them, and it does not involve performance reviews.
Imagine flying an airplane for 26 hours without using a single drop of fuel. Well, that is what André Borschberg did. He's the pilot of the Solar Impulse, an experimental solar-powered plane. Today he completed a 26-hour test flight after gliding in loops over the Jura Mountains west of the Swiss Alps. The plane's 12,000 solar cells absorbed sunlight during the day to power its journey overnight. André Borschberg says the solo flight was an amazing experience.
Well, I had the chance to fly during a beautiful day with a wonderful sunset, with a gorgeous night, you know, with a small moon coming out at 2 o'clock, and, of course, a wonderful sunrise. And, of course, when the sun is rising, you start to get energy and things start to be alive. So that's also a very special moment.
A former Swiss Air Force pilot, Borschberg says the Solar Impulse was totally unlike any other airplane he's flown. One thing in particular, it makes little noise.
It's extremely agreeable. Huh? I think, you know, it's the first time that when you fly an airplane, you can also listen to other sounds. So that's new, that's very uncommon, but I tell you, it's not unpleasant.
The four-engine plane flew to over 28,000 feet at a maximum speed of 78 miles per hour. It's considered the longest and highest flight by a solar-powered craft, but Borschberg says the Solar Impulse is about more than just breaking records.
This airplane is fundamentally a project around energy savings. And the end result is an airplane of the size of an Airbus, of a big Airbus, yeah, with a 64 meters wingspan, but extremely light, extremely efficient. And so we need very little energy to fly it, and to fly it day and night, and hopefully in the future to fly also long distance.
Borschberg and his team now plan to build a more sophisticated solar-powered plane, one that can cross the Atlantic. Their ultimate goal, to circle the globe.
All Things Considered is a production of NPR News, which is solely responsible for its content. Transcripts for the stories you hear today are available for free tomorrow when you visit the story page on npr.org. Listeners like you make this and other programs possible. Thanks for supporting public radio. This is NPR.
LeBron James makes it official tonight. The basketball superstar will announce the team he's choosing to join, and he'll do it live on ESPN. His decision could change the basketball and economic fortunes of the team he picks. With us on the line is ESPN commentator and sports writer Kevin Blackstone. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. I just have to say really quickly at the top, is this not a little over the top? I mean, it's not just an announcement. It's an hour-long special on LeBron James.
Yeah, this is pretty outrageous. I don't think there's any precedent for it. I don't think there's any need for it. And it's kind of disturbing as a journalist how ESPN, from whom I garner a check, has gotten into bed with LeBron James to do this deal. They've allowed him to choose the sponsors for the show, with the exception of one. They've allowed him to choose who will interview him on the show, and I think it's a really bad trend.
Well, since it's happening, that is at least his decision, it is happening, and it is news.
Correct.
In the last hours of LeBron madness this morning, tell us what teams he is seriously considering.
Well, number one has got to be Cleveland, where he's spent his entire career in the NBA so far. And the reason you have to think of Cleveland first is because of the old adage about follow the money. He can earn $30 million there that he can't earn elsewhere, $30 million more. So that would be the first place. The second place would be Miami, where Chris Bosh has just moved from Toronto to join Dwayne Wade, and there's speculation that they may put together a power team, and that LeBron James may forego the extra earnings he could get by staying in Cleveland to go there and hopefully get closer to his dream of realizing an NBA championship. After that, you can throw Chicago in the mix. You can throw the New York Knicks in the mix, who just landed Amari Stoudemire, another one of these premier free agents, and maybe a couple of other cities, but those would be the primary places he may well wind up.
And what about the team that he picks? How much might it affect a team that he signs with?
Well, it'll affect the team in the sense of their winning percentage and their ability to be an immediate contender for the NBA championship. I think that some of the estimates about the economic impact it may have for a franchise and certainly for a city have been grossly overestimated, not unlike the hyperbole surrounding this one-hour television special with ESPN tonight. Clearly, wherever he goes, that team will become an immediate contender for the NBA Finals, just like the Cleveland Cavaliers. Where he is right now. Certainly those fans will be a lot happier. Certainly there'll be a lot more ticket sales and T-shirt sales and maybe some sales for nearby restaurants and that kind of thing. But I think other than the happy meter with the fans, I don't think some of the estimates of his impact are going to be that much realized.
So real quickly, and we only have literally a couple of seconds here, any word as to any sneak, you know, any news, I mean, that you could make right now?
Mike Wilbon's a good friend of mine, and I ran into him in the studio yesterday after he interviewed on air Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, and he swore he didn't know an answer to where LeBron James was going to go. So I don't think anybody does except LeBron James.
Okay, thanks very much. Kevin Blackstone is sports writer for FanHouse.com and a panelist for ESPN's Around the Horn. And this is NPR News.
If you're a regular listener of this program, you're probably familiar with Bill Adair. He's the man behind the Pulitzer Prize-winning PolitiFact project of the St. Petersburg Times. He created the Truth-O-Meter a few years ago to grade the claims of politicians of all stripes. And this campaign season, you'll be hearing more from him on NPR and also at NPR.org. Well, now Adair is training journalists at news outlets in Florida, Georgia, Ohio, Rhode Island, and Texas to do some local fact-checking. NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik went to Texas to see how it's working.
The Austin American-Statesman was the first newspaper partner to adopt the PolitiFact brand locally.
At the start, had some vigorous conversations about why we'd concluded what we did and why they thought we were off our rockers. I have a press release that was issued by Governor Perry's campaign. The headline is, Truth-O-Meter is broken. I think that was issued in the first week we were in business.
The newspaper's Gardner Selby is now a writer and editor for its PolitiFact Texas desk. It represents a big change in the way mainstream reporters report and present their findings, with no slapdash he said, she said involved. Instead, carefully researched pieces heap praise or criticism on candidates for the truth of what they say on the trail.
If someone asserts something, it's not going to just slip by as a soundbite. The Austin American-Statesman and PolitiFact Texas are going to take that soundbite and take it apart and put it back together again and say, here are the pieces that fit and here are the pieces that don't.
Readers around town told me they look forward to the PolitiFact stories. Michael McCathern is a land surveyor.
They rate, you know, whether their pants on fire or whether they're telling the truth.
What do you think of that?
I think the politicians are not looking as deep into their facts as the newspaper is.
So, let's say a guy shows up at a party.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Lieutenant Governor.
That booming welcome was for David Dewhurst at the Texas Republican Convention in early June. While talking about the perils of illegal immigration, he said, quote, Phoenix, Arizona, I'm told, is now the number two kidnapping capital in the world, right behind Mexico City. That got a big honking false on the paper's front page. Dewhurst was none too pleased.
This is regrettably a new low for the Austin American-Statesman and for this particular group. It shouldn't be in the newspaper. It should be on the editorial page. I mean, for heaven's sakes.
Dewhurst says he's more of a policy person than a politician.
I like solving problems, and I know the devil's in the details. So I've never had anyone challenge, that I can remember, in the last 7 years, the accuracy of what I say.
And he finds support from unlikely quarters.
We're at Joe's Bar in Austin, Texas.
And who hangs out here?
A lot of Democrats and ne'er-do-wells.
Democratic consultant Harold Cook was sharing drinks with direct mail strategist Jeff Crosby.
PolitiFact hopefully was going to be a mechanism to cut through all the crap that both of us put out on each side, and then we can have a fair fight. Hadn't been that way.
They say the project gets hung up on the details, missing larger truths. Texas Governor Rick Perry, a Republican, suggested the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico was an act of God and was widely criticized for seeming to dismiss the company's liability. But PolitiFact Texas infuriated Democrats by saying Perry was technically correct in how he later defined act of God. And when the state Democratic chairman declared Perry was living like the French king Louis XIV in a state-leased mansion, the newspaper's Gardner Selby mischievously contradicted him. Democrat Harold Cook.
He is pulling out of a statement some all but meaningless rhetorical flourish that isn't even central to the point, and he's fact-checking that. And that doesn't give voters a clear sense of whether politicians are telling the truth or not.
Selby says his tongue-in-cheek piece made a larger point. Politicians will be held to account for their rhetoric. So let's return to David Dewhurst and the claim that Phoenix had the second most kidnappings in the world.
Sounds outrageous. It's a provocative claim. And is it true?
When PolitiFact Texas reporter Kira O'Rourke asked for Dewhurst's sources, she received links to a bunch of press reports. The earliest such statement was made by an ABC News investigative piece from early 2009. Arizona Governor Jan Brewer and both Arizona senators have said the same thing, but no politician or media outlet cited hard facts proving it. The Phoenix Police Department told O'Rourke it doesn't know.
We called the FBI, Department of State, Interpol, United Nations, Homeland Security, any agency that we thought could shed some insight into this statement, and nothing turned up. Nobody was tracking this statistic in a comparable way.
Firms that insure corporate executives abroad told O'Rourke they don't think Phoenix comes close to Baghdad or Latin American cities. And the American Statesman editors decided it doesn't matter what ABC reported. Public officials are responsible for what they say. Gardner Selby says other journalists have told him they're leery of making a call like that in print for fear people will think they've lost their journalistic objectivity.
My point of view is quite the opposite, that our whole point is to open people's eyes to what's happening out there. If that involves saying that someone's told a half-true statement or a false statement, so be it.
You can read their grades and the accompanying reports and judge for yourself at politifacttexas.com. David Folkenflik, NPR News.
This is NPR.